The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Very nice day yesterday, even if around the world you weren't celebrating Thanksgiving. It's always a day to sit back and look around and try and look at the positive things we do have, although that is not an easy task, I agree, in many cases. Dean Henderson is standing by for this first hour. Hello, Dean. Welcome. How was your day yesterday?
Yeah, it was fine, man. Just ate a lot of turkey. Old school. How about you?
Well, it came and went.
Yeah. Yeah, just me and Jill. Yeah, just chill. We have kids. I suppose same with you, probably. Just, yeah.
Well, I actually, I had a very low-key day, let's put it that way.
Nice.
All right.
That's the way
now,
to do it.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
Better than a lot of people in Saudi Arabia are going through now. Have you been following this? I don't know what you've been following closely, but the Saudi royals and what's going on there is really a scene. It's a big story. You've been on that, right?
Yeah, I mean, as much as you can.
Yeah, as much as we can find out.
But
here, let me tell our listeners a little bit about this, and then we're going to talk about this, because it really is important to understand that the Saudis are at the root of so much of what the Zionist state of Israel and the international banking cartel is perpetrating on the world. They're really the implementing foot soldiers in many ways, literally and figuratively. The latest we have is that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who is supposed to be installed as king this week, keep hearing that, he's still the crown prince, is the guy who came on as the so-called moderate Muslim, in very much a reformist kind of a modality. He's supposedly bringing things forward. Well, the latest we have now is that, as you know, many of the royal family members, a couple hundred at least, apparently have been arrested and are being detained. Now, that means they've been basically held under house arrest. There's a big hotel they're using for that. And the latest we have that came in yesterday, the Daily Mail reported from the UK that American Blackwater mercenaries and other mercenaries have been hired by Prince Mohammed bin Salman, MBS as he is known, accent on the BS, to go in there and torture these people, including the brother, Prince Al-Walid bin Talal, is worth billions, 7 or 8 billion at least. He's been hung by his heels and beaten, And I think what's going on here ultimately is that MBS is trying to not so much do a political reformation as he is. He's trying to loot the royal family to try to replenish the coffers of the Saudis. It is said that upwards of $800 billion are held by all the royals who have been incarcerated, locked up in this hotel. That's nearly $1 trillion that the royal family, the ruling royal family, would like to have back in the treasury. And they're offering these people, last point, apparently, their freedom in exchange for 70% of their wealth. That's the deal. So tell us what you know.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, it does seem to be some sort of extortion aspect to it, because, yeah, these guys are loaded, especially Bin Talal, biggest shareholder in Citigroup, also the biggest shareholder, well, second biggest shareholder in News Corporation after Rupert Murdoch, which is why I've always said Fox News, well, and the Wall Street Journal, for that matter, owned also by News Corporation, are pretty much Mossad, Saudi intelligence, you know, mind control on the American people.
Let me say one other quick thing. It's important to set the stage for what Dean's going to say, that we all understand, I understand it, and many of you do, that the Saudi royal family, this whole Wahhabi, whatever they are, they're varying descriptions, they're crypto Jews. They're working for the Zionist state of Israel and the international Zionist Bolshevik organization called banking. They're just messenger boys and implementers, and they're slaughtering people in Yemen. They're butchers, and they're go ahead.
Well, yeah, no, exactly, and they're. I mean, officially, I'd say the Saudis are the paymaster, right? Because they just fund all the covert ops for the city of London. Because
there you go.
And whatever, there's some CIA trainers and some Mossad trainers, and there's probably some Taiwanese trainers and whatever, but they just fund it, you know, and they funded it all the way back to Mujahideen in Afghanistan. They funded that whole thing. I don't know how much money Prince Bandar bin Sultan gave personally, even just in that arena. And also, he gave a bunch of money to Contras. They gave a bunch of money to Mozambique, Renamo, the right-wing thugs that overthrew the revolutionary government there. They funded Savimbi in Namibia, the right-wing thug who overthrew, actually didn't overthrow in Angola because Dos Santos and the Socialist Workers' Party are still in power there. But that's where Castro fought with his boys in Guevara. And anyway, this goes way back to Saudi paymaster role, and it's been secret. And now that it's public, more and more people are connecting the dots and going, oh, I see, they work with Israel. That's why they would only give Hamas licenses and not the PLO, not the Front for the Liberation of Palestine, you know, nationalist left-wing movements. No, they give it to Hamas, which is basically an Islamist organization, right? Yep. And they did that for years. And the Israelis would grant those licenses only to Hamas. They probably created this latest division between Hamas and the PLO, which is now actually coming back together, interestingly, in Palestine, which is a good thing. But, yeah, I mean, they steer all that, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, everything since the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, everything in between, in every theater, Morocco, you name it. They were funding counter-revolutionaries, Chad against Gaddafi. They funded guys come in from Chad and went after Gaddafi, you know, because ExxonMobil owns pretty much the whole country of Chad still. And, you know, so it's the same old stuff. I think part of it's this internecine family thing, you know, between they're all Sudairi clan, but there's the Abdullah part of that clan, and there's the Bin Salman part of that clan, and so there's some of that. There's some extortion. They are broke. The Saudi economy is in terrible shape because the oil price thing they tried to work out to punish Iran and Russia actually backfired and hurt the Saudi economy the most. There's also a separate crackdown going on against dissidents, not just this royal family right now. And, yeah, under the guise of, oh, we're going to let women drive and we're going to do these progressive, you know, things. It's just window dressing.
Window dressing.
It's window dressing because what he's doing is he's doing a crackdown. And he says he's not Wahhabi. You know, he's a moderate. But everything he's doing acts like a Wahhabi. I mean, hanging somebody by the feet and whatever. I mean, you know, so... it's interesting. I think what's scary to me is that the personality of this guy and the personality of Trump are such that I think they're good buddies, see? And I think there's definitely, the U.S. is definitely behind this in some way.
I agree.
Yes. Yeah, and Citigroup has honestly always been the weak sister of the four horsemen of banking, the other three being J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and they're the one that's kind of been set up to fail. Their balance sheet's horrible, and they didn't get anything. They didn't get Merrill Lynch. They didn't get Bear Stearns. They didn't get any of the goodies, you know, when all these vultures moved in 08 and took over these smaller, you know, Washington Mutual and all these companies. They didn't get nothing. Citigroup didn't get anything because they've been offloading shares to the Saudis, see, over the years, and the Kuwaitis. And I think it's a ship that could easily be sunk, and the Rothschilds and the Rockies are probably kind of slithered out of that one pretty good. So there's that. And he's, you know, be it this Bin Talal, he's number one shareholder in Citigroup. So I think Trump's saying, shake these guys down, get your economy in shape, and mainly be hawkish. And today, you know, he called the Ayatollah of Iran the new Hitler.
Oh, please, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's their whole Hariri thing. His resignation was a staged event to basically create propaganda towards Iran. Because they said, that's who's going to kill me, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's, they're causing trouble because Hezbollah won the elections in Lebanon, which had nothing to do, honestly, with Iran. I mean, they're just popular.
Correct.
They won the elections.
Yep.
So absolutely, that's what happens in elections. Yeah. Well, it's what's supposed to happen, not here. But so it's just, and so they go after the weak sister there. They go after Hezbollah. You're not going to go directly confront Iran. They know they'd get their butts kicked, for one thing. And so they go after Hezbollah. They're going to try to do some little. But it's also backfired because everybody in Lebanon, even the people who supported Hariri, whose father's death, by the way, was also really fishy. You know, and they blame that on
Syria. Oh, he was murdered.
And I think it was a total Mossad job.
Yeah.
To pin it on Syria for propaganda. And that happened right before the whole Syria intervention. If you think about it, it wasn't very long later.
That's right. It was
Syria
right before
revolution,
that.
They call
yes.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Lebanon. And, you know, it was right there. It's like, you know, and boom, then Syria gets attacked. So, you know, it's definitely an ominous sign, meaning that, you know, this foreign policy, if they're behind it, and I think they are, the U.S. sort of, then it's bad. It's even worse. And it could, I don't know. With Qatar, the situation in Qatar, with Turkey now firmly in the camp of Russia and Iran on the whole Syria situation, things are changing. You know, I mean, there's Lebanon now totally in that camp, Qatar in that camp. I mean, there's a lot of people in that camp. And the more the Saudis do stupid stuff like this, the more people leave their camp. And this looks to me like Saudi Arabia is going to be increasingly marginalized. And if they go to war with Iran, they will be defeated. And I'm not so sure the U.S. would step in because they know the Russians might step in. I think they would step in.
That's the biggest question of all, of course.
If
Putin steps in, it's done.
It's game over. And the Russians aren't going to let Iran get invaded by the U.S. I don't think so. They didn't let Syria get invaded. Well, they kind of did through guerrilla forces, but they rolled them back. But now they won't know.
I think the relationship between Putin's Russia and Iran is probably more powerful than most anyone understands. I think it's very strong.
Yeah, most anyone understands, exactly. It is, and especially in the West.
Yeah. We're guessing, but I think it's a very good guess.
No, I think you're right on it. It's more than a guess. I think it's true. It's a crazy situation. And all that in, what, a couple of days, all that happened. And all that crazy stuff happened. And still, we don't really know.
We got to remember that the Saudi thing, first they said it was a crackdown on corruption. And then there was talk about how there was an attempted coup. This probably was an attempted coup. We don't know for sure, but they keep saying we're cleaning things up. It's to root out corruption. Okay. No, that isn't it at all. It's all lies. It's all lies.
Yeah, you're right about the money thing. It's a big one because their economy is destroyed.
Almost $1 trillion. They can extort from these princes and princesses, and they're all being held in the Ritz-Carlton hotel there in Riyadh, apparently. And, you know, if Americans are engaging in torture overseas, that carries a jail sentence of 20 years if Americans commit torture.
Yep.
I didn't know that, but I just read it recently. And, Blackwater.
Yeah, not to mention Yemen. I mean, you know, not even to mention what they're doing in Yemen. I mean, they're blocking off humanitarian aid when you have basically a famine in you know, happening. It's not coming. It's happening. A famine. I mean,
correct.
A huge
yeah.
million people die kind of famine in Yemen, and blockading all these. It's just barbaric, man. You talk about, you know, the new.
Well,
we
got to remember the Saudis. They cut hands
barbaric.
And feet off, and they behead people
oh, yeah.
on the streets, on the corners. That's
they
what they
care.
Do.
Yeah,
no, they don't care. They're brutal.
They shouldn't be our allies, and neither should
no.
Israel.
No.
And that's that, you know. And, but, you know, I don't yeah. know. I'd like to believe there's a chance that, you know, the Tillerson or whatever, they'd go the other way on this. But it seems like they're pretty behind him. And, you know, like I say, this kid, he's kind of young, little, you know, got the braggadocio, whatever, you know, kind of. And I can just see him, Trump, hit it off, see? And they're saying, look, and, oh, by the way, another thing that happened in those 2 days, Aramco was listed on the New York Stock Exchange.
That's right. That was supposedly part of the deal that
well,
was
yeah,
made.
Well, yeah, it was. That's exactly right. And he's like, well, if you just put it on the NYSE, we'll just kind of look the other way when you do this thing and something like that. And, oh, by the way, they don't mind because, yeah, they don't, what they, the last thing the U.S. wants, the biggest thing they've always worried about in Saudi Arabia, because it's not a country as much as it's just an oil colony, you know. And the biggest thing they've always worried about is an uprising, a revolution from the Saudi people. Mm-hmm. And if you leave this economy in tatters for too long, that's exactly what's going to happen. And that's also exactly why he's doing the domestic crackdown on dissidents, because, and they're turning the other way on that too, because people are very disgruntled right now, especially with what he's just done. And, you know, it's pretty blatant, pretty obvious that, yeah, it's not. But so they're trying to funnel that money to the Saudi people, infrastructure, you know, whatever, free, uh-huh. whatever they do, just to appease them. But cripe sakes, they don't even, I mean, when the U.S. trained the Saudis in the 50s, 60s stuff, you know, to defend Aramco's oil fields, they didn't even allow Saudi pilots to pilot the F-16s they gave them or sold them or whatever it was, traded them for 30-year treasury bonds, change of computer thing, done. But anyway, they wouldn't even let the Saudis fly those things because, they, you know, that's they'd always worry about, well, there'd be an insurrection and these pilots would come and bomb the royal palace. So they trained Pakistanis to do it. Pakistani pilots in the Saudi Air Force. That's
right.
How worried they are
yeah.
about that. So that's a big part of it. Because there's a lot of, there's Shiites in Saudi Arabia too, and there's sympathy
right.
for Iran. And, you know, there's that. There's stuff in Bahrain obviously going on. And these kings, I mean, their days are numbered, I think. I mean, it's just a relic. They're relics. It's just, the game's up, you know. I mean,
you know, here's another aspect that we don't want to forget and need to mention. And that is that somehow, and I don't have all the I's dotted or T's crossed, but there's a big Saudi Arabian aspect to what happened in Las Vegas. No question. Everybody
mm-hmm.
knows that
mm-hmm.
now.
Could
top
be.
Five
yeah.
floors of the Mandalay Bay, owned by mm-hmm. the royal family.
Okay.
Al-Waleed yeah. Is the owner of the top five floors. Wally. Call him Wally.
I haven't followed that very much.
Well, yeah, Wally owns the top five floors. That's the Four Seasons. And it is said by some that MBS was over on holiday in Las Vegas because he's going to be king pretty soon. He won't be able to sneak out of the country. So he went over to play and have fun in Vegas. And it is thought that he might have been set up to stay in the top five floors. And there could have been an elimination of MBS by Wally. Who was in line for the throne until he was displaced, and MBS was put in there by old King Salman. So, but there's a big factor there. People
yeah.
just
I
don't talk
that.
About that. Yeah, the top five floors.
Top 5 floors. Wow.
It's all. It might as well be the Saudi embassy. You don't get in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a restaurant, but it's their territory. That's the way
wow.
it works, especially in corrupt Las Vegas.
It is really interesting. So they're probably definitely.
Well, we have video now of two helicopters flying around with muzzle flash coming from underneath. They were shooting. We got two videos of ground shooting, ground teams. I've got all that up there. So, yeah, this was a very sophisticated operation. Paddock probably never fired a shot, didn't know what the hell was going on. They set him up, and Lee Harvey Oswalded him, and that was it.
Yeah, right across from the...
We got, by the way, we got video of muzzle flash coming from seven stories above Paddock Suite from the Saudi-owned five top floors.
Wow.
So they were shooting at something from up there in the top. So something's
going
on.
They're crazy. I mean, the Saudis are crazy, and they just do stuff. They've been emboldened because, you know, we've let them do it. I mean, we let them do 9/11, man.
Absolutely.
I mean, how bad's that? I mean, and you don't even cut ties with them. You just actually, you know, Bush just smokes a cigar with Prince Bandar as they, you know, whisk the family out of the country. I mean, it's just like letting Israel get away with the USS Liberty or 9/11 because they were part of it too. I mean, how long are you Americans going to take this shit?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know from these assholes. Sorry, the French, but I mean that they are. They're just brutes. They're no goods, man. And we have no reason to be allied with them. And it's just, 30-year treasury bonds and oil. Well, big deal, man. Iran has got just as much oil. Iraq, you put Iran and Iraq together, they got more oil. You be friends with Venezuela, you're all set. So why can't you just, you know, get your friends straightened out here? But, you know, we know why. It's just the bankers, and it's their 30-year treasury bond.
Friends not good enough.
The bond market.
The bankers want to own it. They got to own it.
Part of their scheme. And so, you know, it's what's kept the petrodollar rolling. And they know that the minute they dump the Saudis, petrodollar is gone forever. Probably going to be a new economic balance globally, you know, with Russia and Iran and those countries.
Well, they just crowned Putin today. Crowned Putin as world energy czar today. Hmm. He's formerly number one.
You mean, what do you mean by that? He has the most oil?
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's right in the end. Yeah, they just haven't discovered it all yet. Because it's a harsh country, and a lot of the U.S. companies had contracts in Siberia, but they, you know, Putin canceled some of those too when they ransacked Russia in '98, and he went back and canceled a lot of that stuff.
Right.
So, but yeah, I believe it, and they're sitting on it, and that's the thing, Caspian Sea, all that stuff, being friends with Iran, it's a big, it's the end game here in the Middle East, you know, is what it is, after probably 100 years of Balfour Declaration, Treaty of Jeddah, 5 years after that.
Uh-huh.
With the Saudis turning them pearl divers into our clients. Because all them, that's what they were, all these Sidaris, they're just pearl divers, man. We were like, here's $1 billion or whatever. You're the new king, and you run stuff, and all you got to do is take orders. And they did. So it's coming up. The gig's up. The 100-year gig is maybe up. Maybe it's not a coincidence. You know, they got the Balfour Declaration, 100 years.
Well, watch for MBS to be king here within the next week or two, I think. That's
probably
the way,
that'll
every
be the
indication.
Next week.
Russian President Vladimir Putin, according to RT, which is a good news service, by the way, in case any of you have been buying into the lies. Vladimir Putin has been easily the most influential player in the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, since Russia agreed to the cartel to cap crude output nearly a year ago. He is apparently calling all the shots. This is according to one OPEC official, and it's Vladimir Putin, now the oil czar of the world. That's what they're saying.
Is Russia a member of OPEC, officially?
I guess they'd have to be.
Mm-hmm. Didn't know that. They must
do some more research.
That's big, too.
Yeah. All right. Hold on. Dean and I will be right back. Russia has been involved with OPEC for years, but they are not formally a member. So that's the fact of the matter. In fact,
they're coming a bit more involved.
They're very heavily involved.
Good.
Alexander Novak, the Russian energy minister, said that in March, this is quite a while, coming on a year ago now, he said, our cooperation with the oil exporting countries has proven to be necessary and very useful. So they're involved, but I don't know how much trust there is between the two, but it's Yeah.
Certain members, I'm sure there's a lot of trust. Certain ones, like the Saudis, there isn't a lot of trust, probably. You know, but I'm sure, you know, of course, Iran, Iraq, remembers OPEC. OPEC's always had these two factions, you know, and it was always the price hawks, they call them. And that was like Iran, Iraq, Algeria, Libya, Venezuela, Nigeria, Indonesia.
No.
Poor countries, developing countries, in debt, need a lot of revenue, wanted a high oil price. And then you had the swing producer Saudis, and the Shah of Iran was in that category until the revolution. And those guys kept the oil price low for the West.
Mm-hmm.
And they were called the price doves.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, everybody knows that Saudi really runs OPEC, that's the thing. And they have for many years.
Oh, just Aramco? Of course.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly, the size of Aramco and the volume of oil they pump. So that's been the problem. So it would be really helpful if Russia would get more involved. That was a big thing in 73 when they really, that whole oil crisis, you know, was all fabricated. And they used that to really break OPEC and, you know, really break the price hawk faction.
That's what it was done for, exactly.
Yeah, and they did try to break it. They had the whole Committee for Steadfastness and Confrontation, I think was the name of the group, led by Gaddafi.
Huh.
And they were demanding, you know, fair oil prices, you know, and all this. And Syria, Iran, Iraq, we're all members of it. Algeria under Boumediene, you know, he was a pretty radical leader that really tried to wrest the oil and the natural gas in Algeria away from these guys because they got a lot of that.
Uh-huh.
State oil company, Sonatrach.
I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Yeah, right. Yeah, funny. I know.
Here, now, let me ask you a question. What is your understanding about the reserves of oil that the Saudis actually have? I've read between 650 and 800 billion barrels.
You know, I'm not current on that. The last I remember seeing was like 255, and the next number two was Iraq at about 105.
105 you know, billion?
That's been a while, huh. Yeah. But double, I mean, Saudi had double of even the next biggest, you know. But now, I mean, I really honestly haven't kept track of that. I think you've said, I think Venezuela may have the biggest reserves now.
Absolutely. Yeah, let me look and see here.
Even though it's heavy crude, you know, there's a lot of it.
They're different grades.
It changes. And they, you know, these guys hide it from us, too. I mean, you know, Aramco, that's where Valerie Plume, you know, was going. I mean, she was a spy, and she was going into Saudi Aramco, and I think maybe she was trying to find out stuff like that, you know, like about oil reserves, because this was a time when, you know, some people were taking the peak oil thing serious, and they wanted to know, like, how much oil is actually in Ghawar oil field, you know, by far the biggest oil field in the world. And then they did the whole, you know, yellow cake uranium thing, and destroyed her reputation. That was interesting. Was that a setup? Was she set up? I think she was.
Mm-hmm.
To discredit her and what she was doing, because she was working for the State Department as kind of, I think, a spook, maybe CIA even. I think it was CIA, and she was in Aramco, and you know, who knows? But it's all, they don't want you to know how many reserves there are. That's the thing. So it's hard to find that information out accurately and to be accurate.
Here's what we have formally, online right now. The proven oil reserves of Saudi Arabia are the second largest in the world, estimated to be 268 billion barrels.
Yeah, right? That's about 255 was what I remember.
You were right.
Yeah. Okay,
now, as far as...
number one, was that Russia then?
Well, it's Russia, but is it? Venezuela, proven reserves slowly increased to reach 80 billion barrels by 2005, but then they began to grow exponentially as oil prices rose, blah, blah, blah. The country's proven reserves reached 297 billion, which surpasses Saudi Arabia, leaping over the Saudis to become the country with the world's largest crude oil reserves. Now, we're getting, get this, this is as of April this year, the bulk of Venezuela's oil is on the Orinoco Belt, which is in the northern part of the country. In fact, according to some estimates, there are as much as 1.2 trillion barrels of oil in the region. Trillion.
Yeah. Wow.
That's why Venezuela today is under such duress. We are trying to get that oil. The CIA wants that oil, and they want to kill off everything down there that'll oppose it, and they want to put in their puppet. They had a Zionist puppet they were trying to put in there. He didn't quite win the election. Maduro's still there, But the, look, don't be surprised if there was a violent coup being planned and executed by the CIA anytime.
Well,
$1.2 trillion. Even if it's $1 trillion, that's four times Saudi Arabia. Okay, right off the southern coast of the U.S.
I know. And they got the refineries already built at Curaçao, which is that little island just north of Venezuela.
That's right. They built the refineries.
ExxonMobil World Shell, the world's two biggest oil refineries are on that island of Curaçao, and one of each, you know, owns them. And, Exxon, Creole Petroleum, for years, I mean, ran the country of Venezuela. It was a subsidiary of ExxonMobil, may still be. And Rockefeller family, they own a big finca in Venezuela, a huge finca. They're very, they have very much power in Venezuela via the Cisneros family, which is, they're the biggest, one of the biggest shareholders of Royal Bank of Scotland. And they're Venezuelan oligarchs. They're filthy rich, and they're Rockefeller lieutenants, just like, think Kissinger in Venezuela. That's what they are. And they're the ones behind all this crap, all this street thugs and shootings and, you know, violence that they blame on the government. And the food shortages, they're behind that because they own the food importers. They own everything. You know, so, yeah, they're trying to squeeze them and get these leftists out of there. And they want the oil back, the Rockefellers do. Pretty simple. So that's what's, yeah, and that, of course, is always the case with, you know, that's why, you know, Iran's our enemy, and they won't give their oil to ExxonMobil for free or whatever. They actually want money for it. Can you imagine?
That's the damnedest thing.
Yeah. Just crazy people, I tell you, those Iranians.
Yeah.
So they're the bad guys. All the bad guys are the good guys. Get it?
Well,
all the good guys are the bad guys. I mean, it's really that simple.
And the statement by MBS that... The Grand Ayatollah, or whatever his title is in Iran, is the new Hitler. How many times are they going to drag that old dead war horse out and try and make it stand up again? That's embarrassing to say something that
needed,
dumb.
I think they did that to Noriega, didn't they, or something? Or Saddam, or both?
Saddam, for sure. There have been a bunch of them. Who was the guy in Yugoslavia?
Yeah, Milosevic.
Milosevic, he was one.
Yeah. I see they finally caught up with Ratko Mladic, but I don't know.
You and I are the only two who haven't been called a new Hitler.
I haven't, really? Well, I need to get with it, man.
That's right. We're lagging.
I'm lagging. I'm always lagging, man. I was half step behind.
Russia's proven oil reserves are, and I don't expect these figures to be remotely accurate, are said to be a little over 100 billion barrels, but I've heard way higher figures than that.
I think so, too. I think in the end, Russia has more than Venezuela, although if Venezuela's got trillions, that's a lot, you know.
1.2 trillion, that's what they say. And these are petrochemical engineers making these projections, geologists.
Yeah,
so,
interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's definitely what's at stake there, and for years, you know, like I say, they had in the bag. I mean, it's a really recent thing that Venezuela has fallen under these evil leftists, you know. So before that, I mean, yeah, it was all Rockefeller all the time, but I don't think they discovered a lot of that. Plus, a lot of that Orinoco oil and the Lake Maracaibo is where a lot of it is. They're drilling that. They got oil rigs all over that lake, and it's heavy oil. So I think with the recent increases, just like with the tar sands, became more viable. And maybe they even
shale too.
The same with shale. Yeah, and you know, and of course now the price is down. Well, that's another reason Venezuela is suffering a little bit, and that was the point. You know, that was the point. I mean, when it was $100 a barrel, Venezuela had food on the shelves, and you know, Chavez had a big bankroll and could give more free education and more whatever he's done, and he did a lot, and Maduro's doing a lot too for those people. Because I was in Venezuela twice before that, and it was some of the god-awful worst squalor you could ever see in Caracas, and just a few rich people on the bottom running everything. And the
Chavez changed that, didn't he?
Just shacks, and he did change that. People have new houses, people have new water.
Look at the reward he got.
They're very educated. They sent out literacy brigades, all these things, because they kept them stupid, 90% illiterate, just like they do. That's what they do. And once the people are educated, then they can fight back. So it's going to be good luck getting Venezuela back. That's all I'm going to say. Because I think that, I feel like, especially with this latest thing where Maduro held these guys off with this constitutional thing, I think it's over. I mean,
that was a very big development. Huge.
That was a big development. There's been a lot of those on the world stage, and that's why again, you know, I was talking about, you know, it's easy to lose hope in the U.S., but globally there's a lot. I mean, look at the thing in Zimbabwe. I mean, look, the guy needed to go. He's 93. He's probably,
right.
You know, but he did a lot for his country because, again, I was there, and I never met anybody in South Africa as educated as the Zimbabwe people. Every single one of them I talked to, cab drivers. I mean, they were the most educated people. Look how this went down. Bloodless. Lacoste took over. The only people going to be disappointed here are the international bankers, because Grace Mugabe, I think, might have been working with them. And that's why Lacoste came back, the vice president, tossed out, and that was her doing that. And she was the leader of this G40 faction, which is, you know, kind of a new thing. And the old guard, the old people, you know, the people that fought with ZANU-PF to drive the Rhodesians out, you know, Cecil Rhodes people. basically, you know, they're Lacoste, and that's the vice president, that now president. I can't even pronounce his name.
No, I can't either.
Forget
I'm going to wait for somebody else to take that chance.
Somebody
first.
Else can do that. Anyway, but look how it went down. It was bloodless. It was peaceful.
Right.
It shows that they were educated, civilized people. That were they all that. It shows that the revolution in Zimbabwe was a success.
Right.
And
well, they gave
I wish them success, but they're not going to give. Once they figure out, you know, these guys think now that this guy it's going to be all different. Some of them might think that, but this guy's even more hard line than Mugabe. I mean, the coast is the old guard, man. They're not going to cozy up to Barclays or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So they're actually probably, you know, going to take, you know, use the resources. And I hope to God the country can make a comeback, because it's rich in resources. And these bankers have just kept it down, blamed everything on Mugabe. And he's, you know, he wasn't perfect, but like I say, I think he did a lot for his people. And so he's one of those bad guys that's a good guy. So just so people know that, even though, okay, he's 93, he might have went up, you know. And he's in there too long, 37 years, give me a break, go. You know, just go.
Go have fun. Go do something else.
I mean, geez, you're 93. I'm
well, they gave him
a
free pass.
There you go. And interesting, you know, the wife fled right away. Grace
that was a joke.
Yeah,
I laughed.
Fled right away to Namibia. So I think they were onto something. Lacoste was onto something. It was good they did what they did, because I think it was a banker thing, and she would have been the next president. And then, then they would have sold them down.
You know
river.
What you said about the new refineries? What was the name of the island again?
Curacao.
All right.
Curacao.
We have, you know what, when the last refinery in the U.S. was built?
Yeah, right. Long
in
time
the mid-1970s. Now, how stupid is that?
How stupid is that? I know. Take the processing offshore value unadded, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, you know, of course they will, because they can pay a guy in Curacao, like, whatever, $1 a day or whatever, you know. Pay a guy in Port Arthur $100 a day or whatever. So, yeah, of course they did all that. And then they ended up selling all those old refineries to Valero Energy, and they're just a liability. And I think Valero, I've seen them going around now, Valero buying up BP and Shell gas stations, and then they'll just shut down. And I think Valero...
Valero buys up stations and just shuts them down?
And then they shut down.
What are they using for write-offs?
Yeah, I think it's a Saudi kind of golden parachute thing, maybe, where they did this in Houston with the commercial property market in the 80s when Mossbacher and all these, you know, they became Baker, James Baker, all of them became Bush officials later. But the Houston real estate market was really depressed, so the Saudis came in and just basically bought all this overpriced property, took it off their hands at inflated prices. Mm-hmm. And so then they let the Saudis fly $100 bills to the Cayman Islands and whatever, do some drug trade, I suppose, and whatever they do, whatever their part of it was, fund, you know, some, yeah. And so I think that maybe that's going on again with this thing.
Mm.
You know, it's just like some kind of Valero, you know, being maybe a Saudi-held entity. They got to check into it. But they sold them all the refineries, and they're just, they all needed upgrades with the new EPA laws.
Well,
they're all going to be fine. I mean, you know, so all the big boys, they exited the refining business. I don't know when it was, 90s kind of, I think, late 90s.
We have a Valero here, not far, and I use them exclusively. You know why? They're the only station selling ethanol-free gasoline. Real gasoline that won't destroy your engine.
That stuff.
You don't put in anything, especially a two-cycle engine, your lawnmower, four-cycle, it doesn't matter. You will destroy it. Your Harley, never put
it.
No, it'll ruin it.
I agree, man.
They won't tell you about it. Now, Harley had to cover their butt somehow, so what they did was they said, 90% gas, 10% ethanol is okay, but don't use gas with 15% ethanol, because that's bad. So, you know, it's funny. It's all bad, folk. And I only put ethanol-free gas in my vehicle and my bike. I won't put anything else in it. No way. Not a chance. And they run better. You can actually feel them running better. I don't know if have it there, but...
No, they do.
Yeah.
That stuff is...
It's garbage.
It's just, what a waste of energy. I mean, stupid, man, to
totally stupid
corn and just
totally
lug it around and make just a little bit of fuel out.
You know, it's GMO corn, too, Dean, and that's another
GMO
problem.
Corn.
So what the hell? I don't want to eat it, but I don't want to see it going into fuel. I wonder what's coming out the tailpipe. I don't know.
Yeah, right. I know, really. No, seriously. So it's bad. I wonder who owned, do you remember who owned that Valero before? Or was it owned before?
It was owned by somebody else. I can't remember.
That's what I think they're doing. And yeah, some of them they don't shut down, and some of them they do, I've noticed. But that was like in, 2005 to 10, maybe, when BP and Shell started buying gas stations. And that's right before the gas price went up. So they didn't used to mess with gas stations because that's a low, you know, margin thing. You probably do that.
Right.
They make money selling more potato chips. So, but
well, you make a penny a gallon or something.
Yeah, whatever. But when gas went up to $4.50, that changed. And so then, right before that, that's when BP and Shell came in and bought all these gas stations. And so they owned the whole thing all the way from the wellhead to the gas.
You know who runs most of the gas stations? Iranians.
Yeah.
They're heavy into the gas station business.
That's interesting, right? I wonder if they're like these right wing Iranians that fled the revolution. Maybe.
I don't know.
Probably because someone worked for the CIA. I drove an ice cream truck in Minneapolis, and the Iranians that owned it, I'm pretty sure they were like, I was really young, but I'm pretty
sure.
Did you
run an ice cream truck?
I did. I rang that little bell, you know, and went to park.
Good for you.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was something to do. Yeah,
back when parents could still trust their kids to run out to the ice cream man. Now you don't do that.
I know. They would just hide behind her. Yeah,
they'd grab the kids and they're gone.
Yeah. Maybe the ice cream man will have to have like a censored up.
I don't know.
Drive through something, or
Oh, we used to have a nice. What a nice. Terrible. We had a nice quality of life here at one point.
Oh man, that's right. I mean, well, we can do it again, but it's just going to take. I don't know. People
pull
their heads out.
Remember what we got out of the White House now? several stories that Trump is telling. Jared, don't call me Jerry, Kushner and Mrs. Kushner, Princess Ivanka, to leave the White House and move back to New York.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that could be a good start.
It's a start. I know the little punk has been, the little
cool
Mossad mouse has been, at his face sometime and listen to him talk.
Yeah,
he's really a tweak. Out. Yeah, it's something.
Yeah. He's a little freak, man. I know, Lizzie, it's like that John Kelly or whatever, look at him, and he's like, Lizzie.
Yeah, they're all,
I can see them, you know, I think you can see them, kind of the lizards, they look like lizards, I mean, it's not
they
a
do.
Joke.
They do.
But anyway,
Jerry Kushner, to me, looks very much feminine. He's
Jerry Kushner, yeah, very feminine, Jerry Kushner, yeah.
He does.
Seems like it. But that's what they want. They want men to be feminine and women to be masculine, right, Jeff?
Well, there's your role model. I know.
We're supposed to be going for these Illuminatis.
I guess we should start lisping pretty soon. Is that it? Should we lisp?
Maybe, yeah.
When we talk?
Just be a little more meek, maybe.
Keep those wrists loose. And.
Yeah, I think that's the only way that we're going to survive, man. They're going to round us up. But, oh, well.
Yeah.
Round me up, I guess. On second thought. But,
well, I guess we'll get to see President Trump light the national Christmas tree. He's probably looking forward to that.
Yeah.
He'll say Merry Christmas over and over again. And
hope he doesn't torch it, start on a big fire or something.
Well, we got people in this country who would do it.
He doesn't land on somebody else, so, no big deal. Wasn't my fault.
No.
No.
That's
boy.
Funny.
Good lesson for the kids. You know?
That's right. All right. A quick view, a quick look in our last minute over at North Korea. China is playing the game here. I don't think we have much of a chance against China and its chicanery and it's stealth. They're running the show over there. No one's talking about it much, but they're heavy, heavy into this.
Yeah, and he's got Trump in his back pocket. This
Jinping.
I mean,
yeah.
Looked like they're just good best buddies over there.
Best pals.
Playing like a fiddle, you know, really. But,
yeah,
you know, it's a two-way street because Walmart's China and China's Walmart. Don't forget. And
we will see.
How can we forget, you know?
I guess you didn't go out today, huh?
Nope. Did not. How about yourself?
That's funny.
Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Yeah, I guess there was a fight in Alabama and one in Missouri was what I heard.
Well, we get those annual videos.
We make the news again. God,
yeah.
Embarrassing, really.
Indeed.
But, oh, well.
All right. Dean, listen, thanks for everything. Talk to you next month. And
good, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'll talk to you right before Christmas, it looks like.
Sounds good, my friend. You have a good one in the interim.
Thanks,
Dean.
You be well.
Man. Bye-bye.
All right. Mr. Dean Henderson. And, a lot of good information in that hour for you to think about. We will take a little bit of a break and come right back with hour number two. So stay right there.